Hey, Mimi. Hey, Gigi. When you're driving around, just seeing the town, sitting bored at home, feeling all alone, fill up the glass, pick out a glass. We got the tea, we got the sauce. Get queerified.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's get queerified.
Hey, welcome to the Queerified Comedy Special. This is Gigi Gorgeous.
And I'm Mimi. Today we have the very best of the best just for you.
Excluding the last one, because they totally bombed. But don't worry, we have tons of great talent lined up for you tonight.
Including our next act, who for sure is not going to leave a dry seat in this house.
From Peeing with Laughter, of course. Just a forewarning again to the crowd, if you have small children or have any sensitivities, please be sure to exit to the back of your row because shit is about to get X-rated.
Nothing is off limits tonight, just like the queries on our hotline. Call us at 1-844-QUERIES. That's Q-U-E-E-R-Y-S. Ask us anything.
And maybe you can join us at our next open mic. We'll give you a hint of who our next guest is. She is a girl, but definitely not broke.
Her name rhymes with our favorite and now free toxic pop star.
She was there to roast a president of the United States.
Her last name is 50% of how babies on this earth were made.
She's very, very, very good for you. Pop, pop, pop.
And if you haven't guessed by now,
or read the title of this episode, please welcome the next comedian to hit the Queerified Comedy Club stage,
Whitney Cummings.
All right, we are back with none other than one of the, if not the funniest woman I know, Whitney Cummings.
You're literally, she has a mirror that says gorgeous on it. It's pretty, I don't know if you took the, there's a bathroom downstairs that has frame photos of people's nudes. Like someone is paid to do all this.
No, I actually do it all myself. Not kidding.
So you took that mirror to Things Remembered at the mall and had it engraved?
No, I actually have a really gorgeous, great website online. It's a great vinyl, like, lacquer. Well, no, I'm lying. I did it for my, I had it done for my birthday.
This, I'm looking at a photo of you. Is this from Olin Mills? It feels like this looks expensive. I don't feel
how
like that
How big
was,
is that? How big is that? Tell the listeners.
About 4 feet by 3 feet, a black and white gorgeous portrait of you.
It's giving Anna Nicole Smith for the guest campaign.
Big Anna Nicole energy.
Right?
Mm-hmm. And I'm giving big Anna Nicole energy, like, now. How she's doing.
And she's wearing
now
a shirt that says, dump him.
Dump him.
This is a Britney shirt that I was in the back of my car, and there's bigger things to talk about.
Britney right now, or like Kevin Federline, dump him, Britney?
Yeah, I think she wore this when she like was eating hot Cheetos, walking out of a gas
I
station.
I love that
moment.
I'm
really, people are like, bring the 90s back, the 80s are back. I'm Britney, shaved head Britney at all times is my...
Oh, the best Britney.
Is my vibe. But I think that when I encounter or go on the podcast of someone that is like so gorgeous and fabulous, and I boycott it and I just go the other way, mm-hmm, and I'm like, I'm just gonna show up looking like a actual homeless person. I look like a menace to society.
If you can't beat it, go beneath it.
I'm just hungry. I'm not.
But I feel you though. Like, one of the worst things in the world is to stand beside Gigi in a photo.
Guys,
it's
shut
just
up.
You're never gonna win. You know you're gonna get hate somewhere.
The only
it's
way to
awful.
Win is to not play. And yes. So this is me boycotting and just going like, what is the boycotting? That seems like it has like some kind of history to that word. It has boy in it. That's interesting.
Ooh.
Isn't that interesting?
Wow. Okay. This is really getting into the queerified zhuzh. I will stop this conversation right here though, because I will not have you guys saying that I am prettier than both of you, because I have Vogue style retouching.
Let's not play this.
No, okay, so let's I really, really, really want to dive into the new year. We are in January 2022, which sounds so wild. I want to know, what is Whitney Cummings' New Year's resolution? How is the new year for you thus far?
My New Year's resolution is that you have someone in your life that has enough money to buy you a mic stand so that I don't have to hold a microphone on your couch. Okay. You have a beautiful house.
I hear you.
You have a base diptyque candle burner.
I fucking hate you.
Foo de Ba. I can't pronounce any of her candles. That's how much money this bitch has. And yet not one mic stand.
So I got two. Okay, I will defend
myself.
Are you
that desperate to hold something phallic?
I got two mic stands and it came the what is it called? The weight things that come with it came without sand. And I haven't gotten around to buying sand. And I feel like
you
this is my theory.
Sand?
You have to buy sand with it. How fucking rude is that?
Sand?
My theory, though, is that when I have people on, they feel a little bit more important when they're holding the mic. But I know you're used to that because you do stand up. So you're over it.
Bitch, I feel I feel like I'm sucking a dick to get a job in Hollywood in my 20s. Like, this is so triggering to me to be holding a giant phallic object. Like, it's not ladylike,
right? So but you got to get into it because we have 45 minutes to go.
I love you so much.
Your mic stands are being set up within the minute, so
you're like bitch, my nails are beat, I can show my maybe that's what it is. You can show your nails
and not
with
a mic stand being brought in for you.
There we go.
It'll
be weighed down though.
Through.
Here we go. Okay.
Okay, here we go. Now it's on.
I'm obsessed with you. I'm wildly intimidated, and I'm sure I'm going to get canceled on this podcast.
You will not get canceled. We edit this podcast, and also we respect all points of view. But you didn't answer my question. Right. What's your New Year's resolution? Did you make one?
So New Year's resolution, like, I guess for me is to divorce myself from old stories, operating from old stories.
Okay, so basically move forward from the past. That's what I'm getting?
Basically, but I think more like, oh, as a woman in this business, you have to work twice as hard to get half as much. Like things that were true 10 years ago, 15 mm-hmm. years ago, like that might not be true anymore, to just like update the software, mm-hmm. update my mental software of like, people don't think women are funny. Like, that's not true anymore. You don't have to operate from that place anymore. Like, update the facts, the data, you know, the same way that doctors aren't working off of like anatomy textbooks from the 50s, you know, mm-hmm. like update your mental software.
It starts to sound like excuses at some point.
Yeah, it's a great point. Or like, you're 39, you'll never have a kid. You're 39, you'll never find a partner. You're old. Like, mm-hmm. just all those like, that programming, conditioning, that messaging that's just kind of toxic. Like, it's just not true anymore necessarily. And to operate from true facts instead of fake news.
Right. I love that. Mark and I were actually talking about this before we had you on. We were talking about the comedy space and just what I would call misogyny mm-hmm. within the comedic space, stand-up, mm-hmm. movies, TV, writing, mm-hmm. whatever it may be. I think a lot of people don't think women are funny. They should just shut up, sit down, shout out to the Dixie
Chicks. A lot of people don't think men are funny and that they should sit mm-hmm. down and shut
That's
up.
True.
Right. I mean, coming from a woman, I fucking agree. And I think that, you know, people over the years, you said 10 years ago it wasn't like this, but I feel like people like you, people like Chelsea Handler, people like
Sarah Silverman.
I was going to say Stevie. Right. Sarah Silverman, right, Schumer, like so many great people like Melissa McCarthy, like yeah. all these great people have proven
Leslie
that
Jones,
wrong.
Tiffany Haddish, mm-hmm. it goes on and on and on and on.
Yeah, like what do you have to say about that living within this space? Because you have been a comedian for so long and I feel like some of our listeners out there might be aspiring comedians.
Yeah, and I think that my brain goes in a billion directions. And also I must just say, Gigi's mind is truly a national treasure. It moves so fast.
I fucking love you.
And I'm just telling you, all my best friends are professional comedians who are known to have like very fast, quick minds. Mm-hmm. And hers is incredibly jarring how intelligent and quick she is.
Did we get that? Are we recording?
Just know that I get very overwhelmed and I'm impressed and in awe of her. So just know that. I think that it's tricky because, you know, when I started as a woman, it was like, I'm the only woman in a male-dominated field and it's so hard. And now I'm kind of like, I kind of miss being the only woman.
Right.
So just I'm going to explain myself. Don't panic. with all my internalized misogyny. I'm very open about my internalized misogyny, but just make sure that when you're fighting for more women in your workplace, once mm-hmm. they get there, you're not like, fuck, these bitches are hotter than me.
Right.
I'm with you.
I shouldn't have fought that hard for these bitches to now be my competition. So that's a toxic old survival mechanism or
it's like societally grooming.
It's a scarcity complex. It's like coming from a scarcity complex.
I love that. Mm-hmm. Scarcity complex. Mm-hmm. That is huge.
Huge to just acknowledge like scarcity complexes are real. Forgive yourself when you get competitive with other women, other people mm-hmm. that are going for the same job, going for the same bag, going for the same opportunity. Being competitive with them, you're not sexist. You don't necessarily have to be mm-hmm. racist or phobic. You might just want the fucking job and like the scarcity, the fear sets in. So, when fear is present, no other emotion can exist and we can't think logically. Mm-hmm. So for me, when I started, it was like, oh God, I'm a woman and no one will give me a shot and da da da. I started getting opportunities, I think solely because I was a woman that I didn't deserve necessarily also. Mm-hmm. So
you felt like a token is what you're saying?
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. When I started, it was like, we need a woman on the lineup and I got opportunities I didn't deserve. I did fucking take those opportunities I didn't deserve and make the most out of them. I'm like, I will not waste this. I will get better. I will find a way to earn this.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I'm going to use this like, I'm at such a disadvantage. The one time I do get this other advantage, I'm going to capitalize on it. And then, I think in general comedy, like things are funny when you're not in fear or worried. And in general, people are more in fear and worried about women. So that is why there's less female comedy. Because when a woman falls down the stairs, it's not funny.
I laugh. But well, anyone could fall down the stairs. A baby? That's fucking hilarious.
It's just like when a guy falls down the stairs, like funny. When a woman falls down the stairs, like, oh no.
My God.
Yeah. Is she okay?
Her beautiful face.
That might be changing because women now are like, if Ronda Rousey falls down the stairs, you're like, bitch is fine.
Totally. Mm-hmm.
But these are all archaic perceptions of like, if a woman goes on stage and is like, does what is quote unquote traditionally funny in the zeitgeist at that time is like, I drink, I smoke, I cheat. Like that's funny on a man. It wasn't funny on a woman until kind of recently. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's like to say like, there's no female comics. It's like, well, there was no reference point for them to be funny yet. There wasn't.
Somebody had to break the mold. I totally.
I'm so with you on this one. Cause like there are so many archaic things that we still hang on to. One thing that comes to mind, and here we go, I'm going to get canceled, is how we still need queer people to play queer people. Like, I think people have forgotten that we had that because queer people did not have roles back then. Like, 10 years ago, there were no roles for queer people. So queer people were not being hired. Look around. Like, there are queer roles everywhere. Like, queer people can play straight people, and I do not mind straight people playing queer roles. Like, I think it's such an archaic thing that people don't.
I think that when there's outrage and like a trans person should play a trans person, a lesbian should play a lesbian, blah, blah, blah. The reason that happens is because there's been so little opportunity for so long. So there's this overcorrection.
And totally. Yes.
And when you get that little fucking opportunity to get power, you have to push as hard as you can, overcorrect, and then it'll settle down. Like, I think we forget as a species that it is our nature to overcorrect. Like,
yeah.
injustice, fucking overcorrect.
It's so fucking true. And I politely disagree with you, Mark, and we've talked about a million times, but personally, I feel being trans, I feel like now this surge of trans people having kind of their moment, I guess you could say, in mainstream media and pop culture and all of that, it's like, for me, why not trans? Why not
of course,
cast
why not?
A trans person? Why not cast a gay person? Because there's so much talent out there. And I agree. I'm not saying that it's wrong. I'm not going to cancel a show. I don't even believe in cancellation. We all know that here on the podcast. But I feel like if you're going to have a gay character, might as well cast a fierce-ass, talented, beautiful, like amazing, inspiring gay person. But if not, it's not the end of the world. If you're not right for the role, then you should go. Like, it's fine. Whoever's going to be best for it should step forward. But I also relate a lot with what you're saying, because in a trans space, I've often been the token as well. I've been the, oh, we need to check the box. the trans box, the gay box, whatever it may be, whatever I was at the time. I have been known to come out a few times in my life.
Trans box, open that restaurant.
Hello. Oh my God, come on, fast food. Just fucking pastel blue and pastel pink burgers. I feel like I really felt that too. And I took it on upon myself to really be like, I'm going to blow this shit out of the water. They're not going to regret just checking a box with me. They're going to be like, this bitch, you know, ascends being just trans.
You're making me realize something that I feel like is important to say, which is when there's only two or three people to represent an entire population forward facing publicly as a public figure. So as a female comedian, I don't get to just go on stage and like have a okay night. I'm carrying all female comedians on my shoulders every time I perform.
Wow, that's
so
heavy.
Every time I go on stage, whether it's for 10 people, 50 people, not even as a famous person, I am not just up here to practice and fuck around and get better. I am there to change a stereotype that has been built for thousands of years. And
so you know what living as a gay person in real life is like.
Exactly. And every woman, if I'm not funny tonight, it hurts every other woman. So it's not, guys get to just go on stage and go like, I could have a bad night and who fucking cares? And they'll still give the next guy the benefit of the doubt. So if there's so few public facing trans people, all the pressure is on you to behave a certain way because it represents everybody, you know? So it's like, it's not, you can't just make a mistake or try new things or course correct or change your mind. Cause then you're like a hypocrite or you're this. It's like,
right.
Cause there's very few people to represent the entire community. And that's not fair to that one person, but that's where we are. When you're one of the first to do it, you're chosen. It's a gift and a curse. And I think to complain about it is like, you know, kind of just like cutting yourself. You got to just go, this is the situation I'm in. I can either enjoy it or I can like complain about how hard it is to be the person that is like forging ahead. And I've been chosen by God, whatever you believe in, universe, to do
your
this.
Your work ethic, your talent, your drive.
Here I am. Mm-hmm. And I think the hardest thing is, you know, people like us, we don't have someone to look to. Like, who do you look to? Right. You're the first. So it's like Mae West was the first. Who did Mae West look to? Nobody.
Exactly.
That bitch was like, you know, so I think we as kids go, and as we go into our careers, we go like, find your hero, do what they did. Right? Follow that path. Okay, I want to be a comedian. Joan Rivers, I'm going to do what she did. Da, da, da. But like all the things that worked for her or all the things, they don't exist anymore.
Right.
So we're all like lost in space. And it's like, who do you look to?
Like, right. It's almost like practicing your own gut practice.
Because you
just got to follow your fucking gut.
You don't have the Oprah. Like if you want to be Oprah, most people have a person they can look to and go, I'm going to just do what they did.
Who was that for you?
You know, it changes all the time. It has to. At first, it really kind of was Joan Rivers in a lot of ways.
Icon, RIP.
Right?
Did you ever meet her?
I did. I did the Comedy Central roast of Joan Rivers. And that's how we met. I met roasting her, and we met with me saying to her, Joan, I loved you in The Wrestler. And
I'm gonna kill you.
She literally,
I don't even know what that is, but it sounds like an old reference.
Oh, it's a movie where
a new movie.
Mickey Rourke looks like insane. You know, I went so hard at her and she's dying and like keeled over, but then she also, you know, she talked so much about having Botox and the stuff that she did to her face is that people were worried, like, is she laughing? Is she okay?
Oh my God, we would not worry about her.
But then she subtitled her face. She goes, you guys, I'm laughing. It's the Botox.
Oh, like, it's fucking hilarious.
It was hilarious. The most magical moment of my life. And I learned from Joan whether all the platforms that made her the legend that an icon that she is aren't available anymore, that career path doesn't exist anymore. This resilience of I can make fun of myself. I tell the fucking truth. I'm gonna like own my shit. I don't take myself too seriously. Like that is really the thing that I can carry with me, even though I can't mm-hmm. go, okay, then do QVC, then do the red carpet, then do all the things that she did. We have no one to look to.
But I mean, she was also like really old. Like she had a really long life, you know, like did she know she was going to do all of those things? Most likely not. She probably just fell in and was like, yes. And then her legacy kind of played out. It's like she did this, that, and the other. It's not like we're going to be like, I'm going to do QVC next. Like we could be on QVC. Who the fuck knows?
Joan fucking knew. Joan was like,
she worked
Joan,
hard.
No, here's what I'll say. Joan knew this. Joan knew I'm a woman. My days are fucking numbered.
Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to work as hard as I can.
I am going, my brain, I'm going to be funny. I'm going to make fun of myself. This is my skill. I'm going to start fucking selling jewelry and going on QVC. My skill is talking. Mm-hmm. I can go on QVC.
Yes, live, I agree with that.
Be
definitely.
Funny. Talk about fucking necklaces and candles and makeup and shit and sell that. She was like, any means necessary.
Yes.
And I think that like, you know, she didn't have the luxury of being like, I'm just going to pick and choose what I do. She was like, I fucking know that as a woman, your days are numbered. You are, as soon as you start being quote unquote unfuckable, no one is interested in looking at you.
Ugh.
You need to figure out another fucking like trade, another skill.
Right.
You got to peddle your fucking wares. Suzanne Summers did the same shit. She started, she made the thigh master.
The thigh fucker.
Jessica Simpson is doing the same thing.
Dude, the bitches that came before us, like they were like, oh, we have till about 30 and then we got to have an invention or a machine or a vitamin line or a fucking wine.
Totally.
Even Cameron Diaz has a, like a,
she's a wine now.
She has a wine.
Yeah.
I'm like, damn. Like Joan Rivers started that.
She
One
did.
Of my favorite Joan Rivers quotes was, say yes to every single opportunity.
I
and
live
I do that in my
that.
Life.
Yes.
And I live by that. And
a great
you
way
know,
to
you never
get
know.
Raped.
You never know.
You never know when people are gonna stop. Are gonna What did you say?
You caught that.
What did you say? I want to be in on the laugh. What did you say?
No, should we just not?
Oh my God,
you'll
guys.
You'll re-listen to it.
Okay. I'll hear it on the way back. I want to dive into something that's maybe like a little bit deep, but I can relate to it so much. And I think like the listener out there that's listening right now on their walk to school, on their drive to work, whatever, I feel like they can really relate to it. So I know that there is a dark side to comedy.
Yeah.
I know that comedians are notoriously.
You just saw it before this podcast.
I mean, oh my God, yeah. Oh my God, for those of you, literally we had such a little sister moment. I mean, I can't even
get
into it.
Mental illness is not a game.
Not a game. You gotta handle her with care. I feel like comedians are notoriously depressed. They're sad. And they turn that sadness into comedy. And I feel like a lot of people do. And I can relate with that immediately. I feel like when I heard that, I was like, no. And then the more I got into the business, I was like, I do use comedy as a deflection. I do use it as a coping mechanism. And a lot of the time it disarms people and it lets you get their warm side. It really breaks down their barriers while you keep yours up.
Sure.
And I want to hear you talk about that.
Every time you talk, it blows my mind. no one impresses me. And this bitch, every time she talks, she impresses me. And it's really fucking annoying. So, yes, I have a couple thoughts on that, which is, firstly, comedians are sad and depressed. Yeah, I think everyone has sadness and some level of depression. We just advertise it and talk about it and promote it the most. You know, I think that... You know, someone who's on stage getting a bunch of attention saying I'm depressed, chances are they're having a good time. You know what I'm saying? We just have
attention. Yeah.
We're professional complainers. We're professional whiners. We're big fucking babies. And, you know, I think that, you know, I always like to go like, okay, don't buy into this bullshit that all comedians are like so sad and they just get attention for talking about being sad. So they just keep talking about it.
Because some are not sad.
You know who's
some
sad?
Are just narcissists.
You know who's sad? The motherfucker working at H&R Block who like can't pay his bills. Who's like, you know, not the bitch who can afford to go to the comedy store and get paid nothing to talk about their depression and their therapist and their Lexapro. It's like, if you're talking about your depression and your Lexapro, you have health insurance, you have a psychiatrist. psychiatrist, you're fine.
1,000,000,000%.
You know who's actually depressed and sad? Motherfucker Chipotle, who has none of those things. So I think we just have to get real on
perspective.
Definitely
perspective. What it all means. We just advertise it a lot. And we are professional victims and we want everyone to feel sorry for us and like think every time we get out of bed and tell a joke, it's like a triumph. We want like an award for getting out of bed.
For like, making millions.
That's how fucking childish we are.
Right, right.
We want, and then we want to say like a word that you're not supposed to say, and then we want money.
Truthfully,
wow. That's how fucking petulant comedians are.
What does petulant mean again?
Yeah. Petulant, like childish. Okay. Entitled. You know what?
It's like my ball, not yours.
I'm gonna do a special. I'm gonna say tranny. Give me $1,000,000.
Like, right. Right. I mean, what Dave Chappelle just did that.
It's like, I'm real. I'm pushing the envelope.
Right.
Pay me to say the thing I'm not allowed to say.
So are you saying that they're not sad?
I think they is like.
But like, I mean, it's a thing though.
There are no queer ones, so don't say that.
Them? That?
No, I'm saying to generalize about everybody, I think that I think that in the comedians that we know famously, like the stereotype, like come from like SNL in the 80s, where it's like everyone was doing cocaine. I think we conflate sad and depressed with like, these people are on fucking drugs.
Right.
Until very recently, comedians were, you know, same as strippers. Like, we have the same schedule. Like, we work at night. You know, comedians were doing cocaine and they were just up all night doing drugs. That ruins your life. That ruins your family. You fucking blow up your life and then you get sad and depressed. And so then you go, hey, I'm on stage. And all they have to talk about is the fact that they fucking ruin their lives. So
it's
that's
you, strippers, and drag queens.
Like, exactly. So I think that the things that comedians famously have talked about have been sad and depressing because they were on drugs and, you know, their families were falling apart. And it was also mostly fucking dudes. That's the other thing was we're going like, are comedians all sad? It's like, well, the most of the comedians we've seen thus far are guys. And who thinks their life is harder than a straight white man?
Oh, God.
Nope, nobody else.
Nobody.
Do you know what I'm saying? So it's like comedians are sad and depressed. It's like, well, The most positive comedians I know are the ones that have the least amount of privilege.
I love that.
Male comedians are like, I had to wait in line. The airplane food was disgusting. And you're just like, you were on an airplane.
So like I had to put on a bra today and that trumps everything that you just went through.
Like,
but
it's
actually,
like,
not to be a feminist about it, but like actually.
But like, we're like, comedians are sad and depressed. No, it's just white guys, the most mundane things are uncomfortable to them.
And they don't know any better.
The most minor inconvenience upsets them because they're so used to life being so easy that they've made millions of dollars saying airplane food is bad. You're in the fucking sky. Hold on. You're in the sky on a plane in a first world country flying to an expensive city.
You're on Delta One, bitch.
And you're complaining about the food you're eating?
That's enough out of you.
Like, send that airplane food to the starving children in Africa. They will love it. Like, so I think it's like the people that have been doing comedy for the longest time, I think it's changing because we're getting more perspectives and people that are a little more like grateful are starting to do stand-up.
Right.
A lot of these white guys complain, you know, like, comedy is not the same anymore. Everybody's so sensitive. There's cancel culture is ruining comedy. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's like this always happens. This isn't new. I think it's just now there's just more proof that it's happening with Twitter, etc. And look, I think that, you know, I think it's good. There's two things. Number one, the more things that are off limits, the funnier comedians get. So that's what gets tricky.
Because you laugh when it's not supposed to be funny. Like in class, when your math teacher is teaching a lesson, you are like, you're not supposed to be.
When there's tension and when it's when someone says the naughty thing, that's when there's the tension and then laughter's the release. So the more words that cancel culture make off limits, they don't realize they're just making comedians stronger. Because then, you know, it's like, and then if I go, hey, retard, now all of a sudden I'm brave and you,
right,
by trying to make me not say that word or a comedian, not that I use that word in my everyday, I'm just using an example of the things you're not allowed to say. If you make it super taboo, then you're just making the comedian stronger because then it's more taboo.
Right. You know? Right. You're getting the bigger laugh, the bigger
you're like supercharging the word so that they just get richer. So I think cancel culture people don't think they understand. Every time we try to cancel someone, they usually get stronger.
You're talking into Mark's head right now. Mark lives for this. This is
all my thoughts. But like, because comedy is so like, it's such a thing in itself that if you're in comedy or if you know comedy or if you know writers, you know all these things that people don't know. And it's just like the way comedy plays with cancel culture. And
comedy's not supposed to be for everyone either.
No, it's
like,
and it's...
We were never supposed to be beloved by everyone. Like, so to me, the biggest like freedom that I got as a performer and a human in life is to be like, oh, dude, everyone's not supposed to like me. Mm-hmm. I'm supposed to be polarizing.
Right.
If everyone likes me, I'm probably pretty fucking boring. And, like, you know, people are supposed to go like, I want you to love me or hate me. If you love me or hate me, I'm probably doing my job and being intelligent and smart and taking risks.
Definitely.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. If everybody, I don't think there's anyone that's like universally beloved. Everyone gets triggered and projects and stuff.
So I was going to say Jesus Christ, but not even him.
Beyonce, Madonna, I don't know. But like, I think that it's like, oh, my job is to be polarizing. My job is to like take really big risks, and then you're gonna come with your trauma, your projections, your judgments, your sexism, your racism, all this stuff. So there's no, I'm supposed to make you think and shock you, and it's not my job.
Learn something about yourself as well. Like if you laugh, maybe there's something there.
It's like, not my job to make you like me. It's my job to, for an hour, really fucking make you laugh if you choose to come, but also start conversations where you're like, I don't fucking think that what she said was funny. I do. Why?
Right,
wasn't fucking
it's
funny.
It's such polarizing.
But now we're talking about it. Our job is to kind of like start conversations. Mm-hmm. And I think as a comedian, as someone that really just got into it because all I wanted was like love.
Bring joy, probably.
And to bring joy and just like love me, see me, understand me, hear me.
Wanting to make people laugh too. You probably
laugh at me, at me.
Well, comedians, they say, you know, that we're so profoundly insecure and our main fear is being embarrassed. So we become comedians to control how we're embarrassed.
Wow.
That's another thing. Oh my God. Maybe that's not the sad question I wanted to ask earlier. Maybe that was it.
That's humor. That's it. That's a humor thing. I think when we're funny like us, people that walk through the world having been embarrassed in the past,
yes,
you're in the wrong
you
body.
You take the fucking control back and do
you
it yourself.
Like, hey, here I am, a fucking Adderall mannequin.
Yes.
What's up, bitch?
I love that. Wow.
I'm going to embarrass myself. I'm not
before you even get the chance to, bitch.
I'm going to control.
Love that so much.
The bullying. You're not going to bully me because I already fucking did it, bitch.
That is humor. That's comedy. I fucking love
that. That's what it is. You can't come for me. I already came for myself.
I love that.
Then you don't have to wait for the other shoe to drop.
If you do it in a clever way, it's not desperate. It's clever.
This is the only thing that bothers me about like all the cancel culture stuff, which is like the war on self-deprecation. Like,
what do you mean by that?
Fuck
like,
that.
I don't know what you mean
like,
by that.
I'm allowed to insult myself if I want.
Exactly.
So you can't, like, people say, like, don't self-deprecate?
Well, no, it's like, I think that there's this, like, this, you know, body positivity, which I know is a very complicated, like, movement and moment. I wrote a book about it. I did a special about having eating disorders and all the shit I've gone through with my body. And I've lost friends to eating disorders. It's a very real thing to me, the war with my body, etc. But there's this thing now where if you're like, oh God, my fucking, I posted a photo once that was like, here's me and my, because I have like a crooked tooth in the front. It's not that bad.
Bitch, where?
Exactly. It's not that bad, but it's all of our things to us are really big, even if other people don't notice it.
Right,
it doesn't,
definitely.
Yeah, it's like, I'm allowed to like be like, oh, I have cellulite here. Like, don't shame me for shaming myself.
Oh, because other people's are worse. Kind of vibe.
I'm 39 years old. I'm 39. I didn't grow up with fucking Ashley Graham and all and Lizzo.
Exactly that.
I know what you guys mean now.
I get a grandfathered in clause to like
grandfather clause. I live for that.
You can't tell a 39 year old woman she's not allowed to be like, oh, my kimono arms.
Yes. We have a GVC.
So it's like
if
a bigger person does fat jokes, people are like, don't do that to yourself. Like it's no.
Yeah, and
they
then
can
you're
do
like,
whatever they
you're
want.
Like, bitch, I'm mean enough to myself. I don't need your help.
Exactly. Exactly.
So if this is something that just is where I am right now, mm-hmm. that's between me and my therapist and me and my ayahuasca trip or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that the thing that really bothers me is when someone has low self-esteem and they bully themselves, we then go, mm-hmm. you're using your platform to encourage self-deprecation and like, you should love mm-hmm. your body. It's like, but I don't yet. And
right. yeah.
I'm not there yet. I'm sorry I'm not perfect like you, but like, is it, it's like,
I just hate limits on comedy. Like, comedy should have no limits, in my opinion. I think right. when you go to a comedy show, you sign a social contract saying, I'm here. There's no malice from this comedian who's only trying to bring joy and make me laugh. Like, there should be no limits to that. Like, you walk in there, you sign that contract.
Which is, that's definitely perfectly put. And I think, to Gigi's point, to just finally close the hatch on comedians being sad, depressed, etc. Yes, the kind of person that decides, I'm going to leave the house every night at 7 p.m., when mm-hmm. most people are building families and relationships and having fun and relax, I'm going to leave the house, I'm going to go try to make drunk strangers laugh for an hour. Mm-hmm. I'll never say like it is a very specific kind of whatever trauma happened in your childhood to do that, to go like, I need this. I need everyone to love me, to laugh at me. This is the only way that I can regulate and feel seen and safe and sane. So if we offend you, like don't kick someone while they're down. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think it's like, we can't have it both ways. We're like, comedians are mentally ill, fragile, and we're like, fuck you, you offended me. It's like, right. it's like, dude, you know,
this is my lane.
I thought I was a mentally ill mess.
Joking. Like, why
now all of a sudden are you yelling at me? You of all people know that I had all this trauma, which is why I'm a comedian. So like, can I get a break?
Right.
So I think that yes, anybody who is on stage trying to make you laugh, if they offend you or hurt your feelings, like, it's definitely not on purpose. Unless it's someone who's like, I don't know any comedians that intentionally like,
I want to make you upset. Like, that's not
I don't know comedians any do. Comedians on purpose are like, I would like to make sure there are more hate crimes and I'm going to tell this joke to make sure that happens.
Right.
Like,
it's called a gang.
Exactly. And I don't think, and I also don't think comedians actually have as much power as we think they have.
So no, me neither.
There's this funny thing where it's like, well, this comedian made this joke, and it's like, that's the easy person to blame. But mm-hmm. the reality is like,
the person who did the hate crime.
That's the
they're
thing.
They're the bad it's guy. Like it's don't like,
you know, whether it's like racism, transphobia, homophobia. It's like that person's parents who abused mm-hmm. them is actually the problem, comedian making the joke. Like. They didn't know they were walking into like a hornet's nest.
Okay, let's consider this chapter closed. And now I want to talk about the humongous, enormous, gigantic elephant in this room.
Living room. My nose?
No, another body part. I'm just kidding. You're writing for comedy. How did that start?
You're a writer, like a TV writer.
So insane. Two broke girls. Can we talk? How did that start? Because becoming a comedian is one thing, but thinking you're funny enough to write is another.
Yeah, it's called Delusions of Grandeur.
Seriously, though, huge fan of Two Broke Girls, obviously.
Thank you.
But I just really want to know how that started.
Thank you. I mean, I think as a kid, I was the short answer. I'm not known for my brevity, but the short answer is I was alone a lot as a kid. Something I like to call helpful neglect. Mm-hmm. Lucrative abuse. Like having everyone's like, my parents ignored me. It's like, then why didn't you turn it into a skill that made you money?
Right. Adapt.
There's got to be like, I think there's a point where we all need to go like, okay, all these traumas that happened to us, we have to figure out a way to make money off them.
Totally.
And I now see that I was alone so much as a kid, which I thought was, you know, mentally going to mean that my life was going to suck, and I thought was very limiting. But now I look back and go, oh no, I spent all my time like writing stories and fantasizing. I was always in a fantasy world. I was always like doing plays in my room alone, which it's probably the form of schizophrenia. That's a different, but I was like in the mirror making music videos. Like we all, you know, it was before Instagram and TikTok and stuff where you just had to, you know, put on plays for your imaginary friends. And like, I really was writing. I mean, that's, I didn't realize at the time, but that's what I was practicing. That's what I was, the skill I was honing. And then I had such an active internal life. I was always mm-hmm. like, you know, I would see someone on the street and I would like come up with their backstory, or I would like see two people at dinner and I'd be like, oh, this is the first date. And she, you know, she's a lawyer and he's in law school, but you know, I would like make up these fantasy
before creating things. Jokes before writing jokes
before yeah which is my way of checking out of my reality, because mm-hmm. I was socially awkward, I was uncomfortable, mm-hmm. I was anxious, I was, you know, I was disassociating really mm-hmm. from trauma.
Of that,
a lot of people, whether you know, sometimes when you're a teenager, sometimes you want to start drinking, you use sex to check. I was like, I used fantasy to check out mm-hmm. of my reality, you know, and I would pretend I was a princess and I was like lost in the wood. I would like literally go in my backyard, like that was this big, and be like, I thought I was the girl from Labyrinth. I would totally like run around the bushes and just be like, oh, David Bowie, like, where are you? Like, is he? Like I was in
cuckoo for coconuts.
100
Cocoa Puffs.
So yeah, I was doing, I was putting on shows for myself. I was in movies. I was in plays. I was in the future. I was in the past. I was Mae West. I was this. I was that. You know, and so I now see that was like my creativity and imagining going like, oh, I don't want to be in my body. I want to write parts for myself where I get to be someone mm-hmm. else.
Okay.
And I want everyone else to be someone else. I don't like what you're saying. I'd rather write lines for you to. Right. I didn't like what you said.
Creating a world.
Can I just write a bunch of lines for you to say?
And you say it, yeah.
And then that's a way to control your reality. No one can hurt you. No one can surprise you. Oh my gosh,
that makes so much sense.
Because you love that. I relate with that a lot.
You've written it all out. So I was like, I think that was my way, like my version of an adult, like dollhouse. You know, it's like you call all the shots so no one can hurt you, and that's how you feel safe. Yeah. So I had a lot of practice with that. And then, you know, starting to do stand up, my, you know, Sex and the City, like I think goes without saying, was, you know, kind of, it was in a lot of ways, like my religion, like, you know, I don't mm-hmm. have a like specific religion necessarily, but it's the first thing I saw where I was just like, I can't explain it, but I saw observations, the kind of observations I made.
Yeah. In TV.
In a manifesting in a real mm-hmm. way. And I was like, oh, I'm going to do however this got made. That's what I do.
I fucking mm-hmm. love that.
And then
that's your art form.
And then I started doing stand up. I was funny, whatever, who cares. And then I was writing on the roasts for Comedy Central. Mm-hmm. I was a joke writer. I wrote for other comedians. I wrote for late night shows, working my way up as a stand up. And then I started writing TV shows myself, like on my own. I wrote like 5 or 6 just alone in my apartment, just copying. Like,
really?
I just watch TV and figure out the structure and read scripts.
What was your favorite? Because Two Girls was, I'm using the short term, like I know the show so well and I worked on it. Two Girls was a sitcom, right?
Yeah, Two Broke Girls was a sitcom.
Is that kind of your like niche, would you say? That was your kind of favorite?
It was. I don't think that niche exists anymore. Because
yeah, it was a very specific show of like punchlines.
But I met with Michael Patrick King, who made Sex and the City. Mm-hmm. And he made my favorite show, which is The Comeback with Lisa Kudrow.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God, I never watched that. It's really good.
Oh, we are enemies.
Let's binge.
You're my enemy.
No, I'm not. I was your friend at the beginning. At the beginning of this, she goes, this podcast is either going to make or break us. I said, well, why?
Because I came in here a hot mess with a bunch of drama that she has absolutely no interest in. And I was like, bitch, you are like going to have to sweep me up off the floor for the next hour.
Now we're enemies. You're right. It did
we're
break us.
We're either going to be bonded as like best friends, or you're going to be like, you're going to block me. And mm-hmm. then I was like, oh shit, it might bond us together. And we'll be like, this crazy story of how these.
And then the comeback.
And then this happened. Oh, and now it's that. Like, we're out.
At the final hour.
Capulet, Montagu.
Damn it. We'll never be in love.
But
the Jets and the Sharks.
But yeah, it was like, I think that the takeaway, I think, for just because your listeners are obviously like very like, you know, smart and prolific and productive and want to mm-hmm. make something big in their lives, is like, I didn't realize that my hobby could be my job And I didn't realize the thing that I was doing for free all the time for fun, actually, I could get paid for.
Right. It's your calling. Monetize. Find a way.
Like sewing pillows, making wigs, like whatever you're doing on your off time, that whatever you're really good at, that skill, it is possible to market that skill because you're the expert in it because you've been doing it for fun for so long.
Right.
And that's, it clicked for me. I was like, I'm an expert at making up imaginary things in my head. I was like, oh, that's just what kids do. It's silly. It's like, oh no, I can get paid for this.
Really? You're really good at it.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh.
If you're braiding hair, if you're making bracelets, whatever the thing is you do, chances are you can get rich doing it.
Mm-hmm. My boyfriend is a writer and I feel like I know him a little bit more now after listening to you.
It really did hit home. And we actually have a segment at the end of every single episode. It's called Queries. We're answering people's queries from our hotline. Would you stay with us to answer a few of their questions?
And then I have to go do stand up. I'm such an asshole.
Oh my God. Well, you are late to this so you can make time.
I know. You're right. I was not only late, I was an hour late and then I went, I need 30 minutes.
Yeah, let's make it an hour and a half.
To just talk.
Okay, so we will be right back and answer your queries. Hey guys, welcome back. We have a hotline if you are not aware. You can call us at 1-844-QUERIES. That's QUEERYS. Call and ask us anything because nothing is off limits here on Queerified. We have Whitney Cummings here.
Hey.
And we are going to answer some of your queries. Are you ready to get into it?
Yes.
As she smells her armpit.
I feel like I stink.
I can't smell you from way over here, but I have deodorant.
Okay, here we go.
I don't use deodorant, cancer.
Wait, you don't? Aluminum free. Poosh.
Oh, really?
Poosh.
But then that, oh, okay.
I'm just kidding.
No. Promo code Gigi. Promo code Gigi.
You think Courtney does promo codes?
Okay, here we go. Our first query.
Hi, Mimi. Hi, Gigi. Love the podcast so much. I'm Cole from Los Angeles, California, and I just wanted to ask, what are some of your favorite ways that you can give validation to yourself? I know a lot of times people struggle with trying to find validation, whether that's from, you know, men or, you know, maybe their appearance. And I know a lot of these ways sometimes aren't healthy for everyone. So I was wondering, what are some ways in your everyday life that you give yourself validation? Love you.
Love that question.
Cole, thank you for calling in. Yes, I love that question too. Whitney, do you have anything to say? You sound ready to go.
No, well, mine is just like, it's taken me so long and this has been something that's been such a, like, I hate the word life hack, but it has. So I want to pass it on. Is I took a class with this teacher that works on attachment strategy, like the way that we attach to other people. It's a long story, love language, etc. But a mantra that you say to yourself is just, I forgive you, you forgive me, I forgive myself. And it sounds,
okay.
I know it's just.
Sounds cheesy.
It sounds cheesy. Give me one second.
Okay, sorry.
It's because I think a lot of the, we move through the world with a lot of shame and embarrassment and resentment. And I don't think we realize how limited we are by how we're like, well, she's prettier than me and fuck this bitch and I shouldn't have said that. No, I'm such an idiot. Like, I forgive you, you forgive me, I forgive myself. Clean slate every day. I'm not thinking about my coworker. I'm not thinking about my ex. I'm not thinking about my bad behavior 2 weeks ago when I drank too much, you know, Jose Cuervo and like twerked at Senior Frogs for like that married guy. Like, I forgive myself. Forgive yourself. I think that we are hard on ourselves and the opposite, you know, it's that people like love yourself. I don't know what that means. It's, how do you not hate yourself?
Right. That makes total sense to me
now. Is a way
now.
That I understand it better.
Yes.
So it's like, forgive yourself. Instead of saying, I'm going to love myself today. Just say, I'm going to forgive myself today. Dude, drop the charges against yourself. Like, yeah, I look like shit in that photo. Or, ugh, why did I fucking go on that date with that guy? Why did I didn't go to the gym today. Why did I eat that fucking bowl of spaghetti? Just forgive yourself. That is the incremental step I can take. And then we can talk about loving. Dropping the charges was like a big mind shift for me.
I love that.
Like, I am
Cole,
fucking,
I hope you heard that.
Given
that's
the fucking major advice.
Given the circumstance, I'm fucking nailing it.
Right.
Dude, like, right. You look at what I come from. I'm a fucking.
Like, on paper.
Even if I never do anything again and tomorrow get blackout drunk and like fall off of a boat, like, I'm still a winner. You know, mm-hmm. I think we're right. very hard on ourselves, especially right. us perfectionists and overachievers.
1,000,000,000%. And you really did just like map that out very differently for me at the beginning. I was like, okay, Buddha.
I know, I had to, I knew I had to.
But it really does make sense. I feel like my advice to myself, and I'm definitely going to go by that, drop the charges on yourself. I love that. I feel like if you look bad in a photo, if you had a bad performance, if you had a bad day, whatever, podcast, video.
I shouldn't have said that. I whatever. Gossiped.
Right. Ugh. I think what I tell myself, and this relates a lot to what you said, is there's only one you, and this is mine is more love approach, but I'm definitely mm-hmm. going to attack it like you said, but I feel like there's only one you. So like if you had a bad performance, it's still your fucking performance. If there's a bad photo of you, it's still fucking just you. Like there's not mm-hmm. going to be another bad photo of you, bitch. Like yes. I think that's how I amp myself up. It's like you've done all this, you've overcome all this. And even if you're just starting from the ground up, it's like there's nobody else that's doing it like you, because you're you. Like
and?
That's mm-hmm. the power. You are unique. You are one of one. Like
you're one
can
of one.
you can compare yourself. I know there's a saying, I'm gonna butcher it, but there's comparison is the thief worst of joy.
I like comparison mm-hmm. is the worst form of violence against yourself.
But it is, right? Like comparison really
absolutely.
Does just it eats you alive. You can compare yourself to someone identical as yourself in the same field as you,
but that there's
striving
for
the same goals, but it's incomparable. And you will find that mm-hmm. out in time.
That's genius.
And the swifter you find that out and the swifter you can get yourself out of that, the more you can achieve.
And when mm-hmm. you're a perfectionist, anyone listening to this is, us I included, am. What you think was a C to everyone else is probably an A.
It's an A.
But you yes. always got to strive for the A.
So we strive for the A, but it's like our C plus is probably yeah. an A to everybody else. Not that it's mm-hmm. like they don't have good taste or they don't know what's good. I think that's just the way we evaluate ourselves. We're dysmorphic. I call it like talent mm-hmm. dysmorphia. We talk about body dysmorphia.
100%.
Talent dysmorphia.
Yes.
Like what I call bomb ears. Like I can walk off stage and be like, that was a nightmare. And everyone's like, you had a standing ovation. I'm like, I've gotten desensitized yeah. to the feedback that makes me think I'm great. So yeah. I am no longer someone that can judge my accomplishments. Because I'm too desensitized.
Harsh on yourself.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. it's like, mm-hmm. like you cannot tell me how good you look. You have no business doing it. You're not qualified.
Right.
You can't tell me how smart you are. You're right. not qualified. You're
only me and my doppelganger from my DNA yeah,
but
can
bitch,
tell me.
You're not, you don't know anything about yourself.
Right.
We do. We're right. the experts mm-hmm. on you.
Right. It's true.
You've got all this old data from your childhood and your teen years. Like, I don't know any of that. I just mm-hmm. know, like, you're not qualified to evaluate your own performance and yourself.
Yep. Absolutely.
It's so true. What would you say, Mark?
Well, I love what you just said. And I think that a lot of people think perfectionism is about striving to be perfect. That's not perfectionism. We all want to be perfect. Perfectionism is not being able to handle when you're not perfect. It's every bad thing that you feel when you suck. And that is... you need to figure that out, because like that stopped my life. And when I figured that out, I could finally fly. But I think Cole's question was about validation. Easy. Like, set goals and achieve them. Like, that is so simple, but you do that and that will validate you.
That's genius. And this is something that I learned in 12-step programs. It's like, you know, in order to build self-esteem, you have to execute esteemable actions. So mm-hmm. so we're all like, I want self-esteem. You get it from doing things, executing mm-hmm. them, sticking the landing, and then feeling pride in what right. you've done. Mm-hmm. So it's like putting money in a piggy bank. It's like actions that are esteem, setting a goal, achieving mm-hmm. it. Manageable goal. Don't set them so big that you like yep. daily goals. Like, I'm going to send these two thank you notes to these mm-hmm. employers. I'm going to try out for these two jobs. Like, and then executing them and then going, I did it. So then you can start building your esteem mm-hmm. and going like, I'm in pride.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah. Love that.
I
Instead
love
of
that.
Just this vague, like,
I want to be famous.
Right. You're always going to hate yourself because
never the end goal.
Yeah, yeah. Just like, no, I want to like, you know, like small incremental goals that build self-esteem. That's like, that's, and also like, forgive me.
I live for that.
When you are mad at yourself, mean to yourself, forgive yourself for doing that too, because that's natural. Mm-hmm. It might not be your voice. It's probably your parents' voice. The self-critic in our head
It's your inner saboteur.
It's your inner saboteur. I was just going to say that.
But it also is our protector. It serves us sometimes. It's not only bad.
But a lot of the time you got to ignore.
I think about it as like a mall cop. Like most of the time you're just annoying and you're bully. But sometimes it goes like, why are you in this fucking terrible relationship where this guy beats you? You should leave.
True.
It's sometimes the inner critic protects us. You should not eat another fucking pizza at midnight. Sometimes it's good. It's just sometimes the inner critic is right. Sometimes the inner critic is wrong. If the inner critic is like, you're fat, you're disgusting, you're unlovable, bitch.
That's disgusting.
You're on
fuck
one.
That. Bye.
You're yeah, on one.
Bye.
But going, you know what? You should not stay at this club till 2 a.m. You should go to bed. You fucking
practice your lines.
You fucking monster.
You don't know your lines.
I should listen to that voice more.
And go,
yeah,
go.
Me too.
You should go sleep 8 hours so that you're rested and you don't have a headache tomorrow. So sometimes it's either one that is wrong sometimes or it's two different ones. But I do think the inner critic. We have to have a relationship that's like, okay.
Filter it. Put a Brita on it.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. No self-harm and no, but sometimes it's there to protect us, you know?
I love that. It's true.
And sometimes it's contrast. Sometimes you're just going to have fucking bad days where you hate yourself.
Exactly.
And that's
There's
okay.
There's 365 days in the year. Give yourself a day to not be your best. And also sometimes you're like, I kind of suck today. It's fine. Cause there's tomorrow.
But honestly, it doesn't have to be true. Like, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I know plenty of people that don't like the movie Desperately Seeking Susan. You're wrong. So you can also in your mind be wrong. You know, I've been wrong before. I thought that guy with a chain wallet was my soulmate.
I've never been wrong.
Me neither.
And yesterday I thought I was a piece of shit. Like, oh, I was just wrong.
Right.
Yeah.
That's also
forgive.
Fine.
Release
you know
the charges.
Yeah, drop the charges.
I fucking love
just
that.
Just know that sometimes when you hate yourself or you have a negative inner monologue about yourself, you might just be like, I might just be wrong.
I can already see myself at a club at 1:35 a.m. and a girl is venting to me about this bad thing. And I'm gonna look at her in the eyes, say, hold my hands. I'm gonna look at her in the eyes and say, drop the charges on yourself. And then I'm gonna walk out and dance my life away
forgive
till 2 a.m.
You.
I will.
And then you're gonna call me at 4 a.m.
And I'm gonna say, Whitney, come over.
Yeah, and then I'm gonna say, okay, be there in an hour. And by that I mean 6 hours. And by that I mean next week.
Never, yeah.
No, and then I'll be like, I forgive you, you forgive me, I forgive myself.
Release, drop the charges.
You're like, bitch, I don't forgive you. I'm like, yeah, you do.
What are we talking about again?
You forgive me.
What charge?
Well, Cole, I hope you got those answers. Let's
Thank
do
you,
one
Cole,
more.
For that.
Let's,
yeah, let's do one more.
Hey, guys. So my name is Kendall Travis. I am a 22-year-old trans female from Quincy, Illinois. I recently just came out as trans, and boy, do I feel free. But I am reaching out to you guys because personally, it's for Gigi. I just want to know, like, how have you just manifested all of this? Like, how have you just, like, I don't understand. Like, you know, I know that
2 minutes left.
I know that it's, like, usually not easy for anybody, but, like, I just have been so struggled with everything. Like, I have just struggled with literally all of it. And even though I had just came out and I haven't went through FFS yet or anything, you know, I can still be very passable. So I guess it makes it easy in a way, but it's just like, I don't know. It's just overall so hard. But if for whatever reason, if you want to check it out, my username on Instagram is me, bitch, it's me. My name is Kendall Travis. But yeah, I have literally loved and supported you from day one, girl. And I still to this day, years later, still keep up with you. And like, I'm so proud of you. I'm so honored to be a fan. And I just love you. And thank you for doing this for yourself. But you've also had a huge impact on so many other trans women and transgender people in general. Like, thank you. Like, seriously. And I hope that you walk with pride every single day of your life because you deserve a beautiful. Have a good day.
Kendall, that was such a sweet message. Gigi, this is a question for you. But
yes,
before you go, you know what? I don't think people know how hard you have it. Like, I don't think people care to know that or understand that.
Yeah.
But
yeah, she doesn't have a mic stand.
I don't even have a mic stand.
I mean, God, it's like she's in a slum.
Whitney has seen it firsthand. How embarrassing. Kendall, we all were misty-eyed listening to that. I just want to say how much I love you. Like, literally, I wish I could give you a huge hug. First of all, congrats on coming out. So major. Mm-hmm. And I will say, it's so hard to be your own biggest fan when maybe you don't even really believe it. But coming out as trans, you're initially coming out as a warrior because people will tell you it's a phase. People will tell you that you're a man still. People will tell you that they're not going to believe it. People will still use the wrong pronouns, the wrong name. They'll tell you a bunch of bullshit. But in the end, you're going to have to learn how to be your biggest fan. Alone at night, you sleep with yourself. It's you in your brain. So if you can't convince yourself that you are fucking everything, and I think this goes to the previous question, Cole's question, I think it is just, it's so imperative that you be Kendall's biggest fan. I am Kendall. I am she. Hear me roar. And I will say with the FFS, I know I heard you mention that you haven't had FFS yet. Surgery for me has been such a battle because I thought for a long time, I'll get this surgery. It'll fix me. It'll be fine. You have to grow so much more internally. Like, I'm still growing. I've been trans for 10 years now, this year, 10 years. And it's just one of those things where it's a daily struggle. So you have to be Kendall's biggest fan. And I'm out here rooting for you. Like, I'm obsessed. Like, even hearing you speak, you're so eloquent and you have like all the right state of mind. And I just really want to hug you, sister.
And I'm going to say something as someone that can't really identify with that I just feel, I think more people should be saying in terms of like transphobia and negativity about, if someone is phobic of you, it means they're scared of you, which means you are more powerful than them. That's
oh
what
gosh.
It true. Yes. That's what it boils down to. So it's like, I'm not saying take it as a compliment, but the way this is you're not scared of someone unless they are more powerful than you.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So if someone that doesn't understand it, they're also saying I'm dumb. So they're also just dumb. Mm-hmm. So someone that's like, I don't understand this, I don't get this, they're basically just, what the subtext is, I'm old and I'm dumb.
Hell yeah.
You know
yes.
what I'm saying? So that's what they're really saying. So don't take that as an insult to you. They're insulting themselves. And then if someone is phobic or scared, they're going, you're more powerful than me. Mm-hmm. That's what they're actually saying. So I'm not saying take phobia as a compliment. You know, it's got to go. Those people just have to
die. There's something wrong with them. But like, they're broken.
You're powerful. Think about it. In any movie, Jurassic Park, when people are scared of something, it means it's too amazing and too powerful and going to take their job and is the future and they're the past.
Or God forbid, out them. Because God knows, Mark and I know, when we came out the first time in high school, a lot of people came against us because they were homophobic at the time. We were both gay back in the day. Well, Mark... whatever. You know what I mean? You know what I mean, Kendall girl. If you followed me since then, people show their true colors when there is someone stronger and bigger around. Like there is
and
a little
threatening
thing.
Threatening their safety. Yeah.
Exactly. Threatening if someone is feeling
safety.
Maybe a little gay, maybe a little
and by
trans
the way,
inside.
Every transphobic celebrity is sliding in all to my trans girlfriend.
I could,
Steve.
I mean, like, it's so,
so
cliche
can,
to say it,
this.
But we all
let's
know.
Let's just.
It's true.
We all
I mean,
know.
It's right literally on their face. Things you say. Like,
that's
we used
something
to,
I feel like people should just know very early on is that, like, anyone that is that mad at you just wants to be in bed with you and needs
literally.
To like, find a way to.
Ain't that the truth? Well, Kendall, thank you so much.
I also just want to say, don't compare yourself to Gigi. Like, no one is going to compare to this bitch. We were just talking about it earlier. The worst, most upsetting thing is being in a picture beside Gigi. Because it is
up.
Just...
I look like the
guys,
twin, the
no.
Carrot Top's
don't
twin
compare.
That he ate in the womb.
Didn't we just talk about comparison? For the love of
yeah,
God,
yeah, don't
guys.
Compare, Kendall. Don't. You're Kendall. Gigi is over here doing her own thing. Don't worry. Don't worry about what Gigi's doing. You got to focus on what you need to do for yourself.
But how cool is it that you get to be alive at a time where there is someone like Gigi ahead of you?
The Yes.
Who did all the fucking
mm-hmm. Yeah, and everyone's struggles are different. Like Mark said at the beginning, you don't know how hard I had it or I have it now. Mm-hmm. You have no idea because I don't show that. I only show what I want, Kendall. So it's like you may be thinking like your struggles are more than mine, but it's really not true. Everybody has their own struggles and they are detrimental to each person individually.
No, the anesthesia is way better now. 10 years ago?
Oh, I'm high as a kite still.
What do you mean?
Oh go after it.
Surgeries with a cotton gin. You should be psyched.
All my tattoos are ink and prick.
Her face was lasered with just an actual grease fire.
An actual Trump
just
laser.
Put her face in the fryer at McDonald's. Like, take a win. You have
God.
It good.
Okay. I cannot. Thank you, Kendall, for that question. And thank you,
thank
Whitney,
you
for
so
coming
much.
On this
I
podcast.
You. I love you.
So
what an honor. This is an honor.
What are you working on? Where can people find you? All that good stuff.
All that good stuff. So I get so embarrassed promoting anything. I'm in a bunch of movies coming out next year.
What kind? Can you say?
One is with Machine Gun Kelly and
Him.
Yeah, and Megan Fox. And they directed it. I play Machine Gun Kelly's like crazy Hollywood agent. And I'm in the movie. The Foo Fighters made a movie. And like a horror movie that I'm in. And then and I have a podcast also. It's called Good For You.
And
we just have like all sorts of people on. And I'm going to con Gigi into coming at
some
point.
Not me yet.
As
I was
well.
Going to say.
No, yeah, not just like not a fan.
That's funny.
I know. No, we've been like trying to schedule this for
we
a, very,
have, yeah, yeah,
a very long
we're
time.
We're busy.
But can I tell you something? No, it's not that. I'm insecure. We're redoing my podcast studio and I want to wait for you to come to the new studio because the old studio kind of looks like a shitty community theater production.
You had Paris Hilton go there. She's good enough.
By the way, Paris Hilton walked into, it looked like she was rebooting The Simple Life.
Oh, she was like, oh.
When she came into like, my house is under construction. She's in my shitty podcast studio with like a wrinkled linen curtain. And we're like, oh my God. Like Paris Hilton is literally.
Oh, she's the most down ass bitch
the
though.
Best.
Yeah, she really is.
She was the best ever. But I look back and I'm like, I cannot believe I almost gave Paris Hilton tetanus. Like, she came. The fact that I let her in that studio is wild. But so we want to have you in when we have the new shiny studio.
Oh, I can't
next year.
Wait. I can't wait. My schedule is wide open. I'll make you wait an hour and a half just like you did me.
Okay.
It's only fair, right?
Yes. You know what? I deserve that.
Actually come an hour and a half early and bug you for an hour and a half.
Oh, okay, bitch. You know what? I had a Christmas party that on the invite said from 6 to 10. This bitch shows up at 11. And so you know what?
This is true.
So you know, it shows up at 11. I'm like putting cupcakes
that sounds
in the
right.
trash. People are leaving. Like
we had fun though.
I'm in my pajamas and then this bitch, I order these little like light up things from Amazon, these little glass like candy cane things. The next day they're all just shattered on my driveway.
Oh my God, that was not me.
It was just like a car that like,
oh, I was like, that was not me.
It wasn't you. It was just like some.
It was her. It was.
I need some way to feel less guilty about
okay, okay, okay.
being an hour
I'll take
late
it.
Today.
I shattered all of them on your driveway.
No, you're
your
the best.
Driveway.
And I'm so glad that you came late because we got to spend one-on-one time together.
Yes.
And
as we will right after. I'll drive you to your your stand-up.
I just can like never spend enough time with you.
Oh my God, ditto. Well, guys, that was Whitney Cummings. Thank you guys so much for listening.
I
that
love
was
you.
Queerified. This is the new year.
If you hate
it's a new
me, I'm
season.
Sorry, and it's also okay.
Oh no, people live, I'm sure.
No,
please let us know. Call into the hotline and we will see you guys on the next one.
I
bye,
love
Whitney.
You guys. I hope
bye.
I bomb this.
Thank you so much to our guest, Whitney Cummings, and thank you for listening. You can follow us on Instagram at Gigi Gorgeous and me at Mark Maverick.
And as always, Queerified is a presentation of Ramble, a Cadence 13 studio. Please listen, rate, and review. We are now shouting you out. Can't wait to see what you guys say, where you're from, your name, all that good stuff. We will be shouting you out. And you can follow all episodes available now for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Odyssey, and wherever you get your podcasts. See you in the next one. Love you guys. Happy New Year.